Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Even though you make payroll every Friday, you don't have a guaranteed paycheck. You're a small business owner, and you eat what you kill.
We work hard to accumulate sales, to acquire sales from our customers. We work like crazy to buy our products at the lowest possible price. We train our employees to be the best that they can be. We work really hard to squeeze as much production out of the expenses that we pay. But if you really want to drive your bottom line, one of the things that you've got to pay attention to is quality. Installing a quality process in your company. And I'm not talking about quality service, I'm talking about quality process. And we're going to explain that to you later as we go through the hour. Let me tell you who our special guest this hour. I'm very excited about having her on the show. Leslie Kossoff is the founder and the principal of Kossoff Management Consulting, which is a leading expert in quality and productivity improvement. She's been designing and implementing quality systems for more than 20 years, started when she was 5, assisting such prominent clients as Kraft Foods, 3M, and TRW. She also actively focuses her attention on the unique needs of small and medium-sized firms in achieving their continuous improvement goals. She's the author of a book that I'm holding in my hand, Managing for Quality, and another book that we're going to talk about in a later day, Executive Thinking. Leslie Kossoff, welcome to the show.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you with us, and I'm excited. By the way, Leslie is a friend of Kelly Owyler, an old friend of ours. And Kelly introduced me to Leslie, and I appreciate Kelly for doing that.
She's wonderful.
She's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie, I am very excited, and my audience knows this. I've been whooping it up now for several days telling them that you were coming. I'm so excited about having you here, and we're going to talk about quality today, but I want you to go back and talk to us about the history of quality, and it is not possible to talk about the history of quality without talking about one individual, and that's Dr. W. Edwards Deming. And I have been fascinated for several years about his life and how he did what the things that he did and the way he changed the marketplace and then when I found out that you actually, and I didn't know this until you and I spoke, to find out that you actually traveled with him, that you were actually his assistant, that really impressed me. And I would like for you to go back and take us through a little tour of quality and then talk to us about Dr. Demings.
I would be more than happy to. And I must tell you, it's really a pleasure to have the opportunity to talk about quality because it became so faddish in the latter part of the 1980s and early 90s
yep.
that it lost a lot of the substance that it really does come with. And so, you know, bravo for you bringing it back to the fore and making sure that people know that this is something they need to do.
Well, you know, and pardon me for interrupting you. Thank you for saying that. But the way I like to think of quality is if you meet the fad that you were talking about in the 80s and early 90s, and I actually, you know, was in the middle of some of that. I saw that happening. Those people were sort of like the new karate student compared to the black belt master. You know, for that black belt master, karate is not a thing, it's a way of life.
Yes.
And some of these students, these people you were talking about, like you were saying in the 80s and 90s, they were saying, okay, I want quality, give it to me now.
Yes.
And that's not the way quality works, is it?
No, absolutely not. When quality works the way it's supposed to work, it's embedded into everything in the organization, from the strategic direction of the organization to every single line operation and customer service and frontline employees. There isn't a single corner of the organization that misses having quality embedded in what is being done by all of the employees. But getting there is very challenging, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of why companies will sometimes only go partially through the process. which actually brings us back to that question that you first started with about the history of quality in this country. Deming worked with a gentleman named Walter Shewhart in the late 1920s and into the early 1930s at the Bell Labs, and they came up with a statistical model for measuring processes, which is really the basis of statistical quality control or statistical process control, at least what we came to call it later. Mostly it was really using control charts and coming up with a method for determining how to predict what can go on in an organization. It was so successful as they were working on it, and again, because of the timing into the 1930s, that it started being applied in our defense plants. We were building arms for the Allied forces in Europe as World War II was beginning, because, of course, it began over there years earlier than our involvement. Again, it was so successful, and we were able to escalate and support their needs so well, and to a great extent because of the use of these tools, which allowed us to predict what was going to happen, how it was going to happen, and this is in our manufacturing processes, that when we joined the war effort, then we were able to even escalate our production all the more.
You know, you think about where the country was, literally from an industrial standpoint, say in 1938, 1939.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you realize that over the next 5 or 6 years, how much armament we turned out. The airplanes and the tanks and et cetera.
Oh, yes.
It's phenomenal. I mean, if you ever think about that, it just boggles the mind.
It's true. It does boggle the mind. I don't think that, you know, for all of our talk about the levels of productivity now and the rest, I don't think that we've ever seen anything like what we did during those years.
The GI generation, they were something.
Absolutely. And also, there were challenges in the plants at that time because, especially once we joined the war effort, women were coming in and doing the work that they had never done before. The plants and their management were not used to having women. Let's continue with that later.
Yeah, there are women who are already saying, way before you mentioned women in the marketplace, there are women out there saying, well, that's the reason we got so much done. They let the women in the into the factories. 20 after the hour, I'm Jim Blasingame. Mr. PC, we'll be back in just a minute with Leslie Kossoff. Stay with us. Thank you very much for being part of our day. I appreciate your business. We're visiting with our new friend, Leslie Kossoff, and I'm excited about having her here. Leslie is the author of Managing for Quality, How to Implement and Manage a Business Strategy of Continuous Improvement. She's also the author of another book, which we'll talk about another day, which is called Executive Thinking. Leslie, tell us where the books are available, please.
The books are most easily available online through Amazon.com.
Okay. But also in brick-and-mortar bookstores?
Yes, absolutely. Executive Thinking is more easy to find in the brick-and-mortar bookstores. Managing for Quality takes a little bit longer.
Okay. And check that out, folks. And the last name is spelled Kossoff, right?
Yes.
Check that out when you type in that name in the online bookstores. Leslie, you were talking to us about... I was asking you to talk to us about the history of quality in the world, not just in the United States. And we were talking about obviously one of the ways that we got all this work turned out during World War II was women entered the factories.
Absolutely.
And that solved all the problems, right?
Well, you know, from my perspective, of course it did. Well, you know, and we could actually do a gender-based history of quality. I don't think we want to go there.
No, I don't want to go there.
No.
That wouldn't be as much fun for me.
No. But the fact was, because women came into the factory, and from a management perspective, they were an unknown quantity, any of these kinds of statistical control mechanisms that Deming and others at that point had been bringing into the factories were of particular importance to the management that was directly overseeing the production areas. So the various statistical tools, and at that point, all quality was defined by really was the statistical tools that were being used.
Which are neuter gender.
Absolutely. Yes, they are. And so, so those were being used and just, you know, wonderfully successful in the plants. Well, we won the war.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the war, inside of the plants, it was determined that because there was a de-escalation in production, because, and in fact, for later purposes, what Deming realized was that because senior management and executive management had not been involved and aware of the quality initiatives going on the plant floor, it was discontinued.
The cause was what was driving quality, not fundamental management commitment.
Exactly.
It was because of the cause, the crusade, this war we were in, this passion that we were all, this thing we were so passionate about, that was what was driving quality. It almost took on a life of its own, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It absolutely took on a life of its own.
But then when the war was over, that life ended, so to speak, and we reverted, didn't we?
Yes, we did. At that point, our thinking was that we were the premier producer of products across, you know, around the world, and so we didn't have to focus on quality any longer. At that point, realistically, because of what had gone on both in Europe and in Japan, there were no other real manufacturers in the world.
There was no competition.
No, none whatsoever.
I mean, every other country that could possibly have mounted any competition for our products was bombed to smithereens.
Yes, absolutely. But we didn't think about it that way.
Including England.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. England throughout continental Europe and Japan.
Yeah.
There was just no competition whatsoever.
But so we got lazy.
Excuse me?
We got lazy.
We did. Extremely lazy, because we didn't have to be, we didn't have to pay attention to it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and this was a very sad time for Deming. And, you know, getting to some of the things that he and I spoke about, it was very, very frustrating for him because at the end of the war, he was still working with many of these companies and at that point trying to get their executive management to see why it's so important for them to continue along these lines and even to grow the process further. And there was simply no interest whatsoever. And it was, to the end of his life, it was always a very disappointing thing, the way that the United States had ultimately responded to quality and his efforts.
Using my martial arts analogy, which I'm not a martial artist at all, I just think it's an interesting thing. Dr. Deming was, you know, a 10-degree black belt at a time when nobody wanted to learn karate or learn the martial arts.
Exactly.
And he was living it. It was every fiber of his being, and I can see why he would have been sad during that period you were talking about. Leslie, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, we've got more to tell you about. We're going to get into the quality process in a little bit. We've got more history first. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I appreciate your business. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with a new friend, Leslie Kossoff. She's the author of Managing for Quality, also Executive Thinking. I want you to check out both books, folks. This Managing for Quality book that we're talking about right now, though, if you want to know about quality, if you want to know about how it should be applied, this is an excellent book. I've been through it. And, folks, there are a lot of books out there that are written about quality that are very, very technical. And this one has some of that in there, but it's written in such a way that the average person who maybe doesn't know anything about quality can understand it. And Leslie, I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you very much.
Folks, I've asked Kelly to take us back. I mean, Kelly, I was thinking of our friend Kelly Owen. I'm asking Leslie to take us back and talk to us about the history of quality. And the reason is because there have been a lot of mistakes. There have been a mountain range of mistakes made over the last 50 or 60 years in quality, in applying quality or not applying quality. And I want to make sure that you don't make any of those mistakes, because I know small business owners, if they're going to install the quality process in their organization, Kelly, why do I keep saying that? I wish I'd never mentioned Kelly to start with. Leslie, the reason that I want them to know about this, Leslie, is because they don't have extra money. Small business owners don't have a lot of extra money. They have to do it right the first time.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason why I want you, Leslie, to tell us about the history. Now, you were telling us, you were bringing us up to date, a little bit up to date on Dr. Deming's, and after we were talking about after World War II.
Well, and it really is after World War II that Deming came into his own in terms of prominence, but oddly enough, it was in Japan. He had been invited over as part of the group that was responsible for taking a census in Japan after the bombs had been dropped and after the war was over. And there was a team of people that came over to Japan to start working on sort of the rebuilding of that country. And Deming had been working among his many other jobs. One of the jobs that he had was for the Census Bureau. And in fact, up until very recently, just so you know how solid his statistics were, it was still his predictive statistical model that was used for the census right up through the 1990s. I don't know if they're using it for this 2000 census.
I'm going to find out about that.
Yeah, it's a just a wonderful...
That's an incredible legacy.
Yes, it really is. And so, of course, you know, he was brought over to help with the census. While he was over there, though, he was approached by members of the Union of Japanese Scientists and Engineers who knew of his work in the American plants. And I once asked him, how did they know? And he simply smiled at me and wouldn't say anything. And so I don't know how they knew, which I think must be a fascinating story all on its own.
It's lost now, though, isn't it?
Yes, unfortunately. But he was approached and asked if he would teach the Japanese scientists and engineers what he had taught the Americans to help so much in the escalation of all of their manufacturing and to create such quality products.
Before you go any further, Leslie, did the American industrialists basically, did they just say thank you but no thanks, you did a good job but we don't need you now, or did he approach them? Did someone approach the industrialist on his behalf or on quality's behalf? What do you know what happened to cause American industry to turn away basically from the quality processes of World War II?
It was basically what you just described. Once the war was over, once there was no competition, and because senior management had not been involved at all in the quality initiative.
But I mean, was there any? Do you know of any conversations? Any maybe almost a meeting or something where Ford or GM or Chrysler or Packard or whoever, Boeing or whatever, you know, where someone said, you know, we think we can do without that. Do you know of anything like that?
It's my understanding that once the decision was made to discontinue the quality efforts, that Deming did, in fact, with others, go to the leaders of the various industries and try to convince them otherwise, and simply he was greeted with no interest whatsoever.
Okay, I was wondering about that because I had read, in fact, I'm trying to remember in his book that I read, I wasn't able to find it this week. It's in another location, but I wanted to go back and look at that. I was thinking that I saw that there was something like that happened. Let me throw out one other thing real quickly. What are the chances that, well, one thing we know, when the war was over and the guys came home, the women were basically riffed, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Most of the women had to go because they said, you know, you got to go home and make biscuits. The guys are coming back. They have your job.
Absolutely.
So did we lose a brain trust there?
We lost.
We lost a quality brain trust, didn't
yes.
we?
Yes, we did, absolutely.
And I've never heard anybody else talk about that. I just wondered if that was something that happened.
Yes. It was, absolutely, because, you know, the women were let go, and in fact, even in those positions where the jobs still remained, the women were replaced with men,
right?
Because the attitude was, as you said, women should be home making biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
And since, you know, and there's a lot of argument that was some of the basis of what ultimately led to the women's movement, was that first level of dissatisfaction.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I had not thought about that, but I can see that. Leslie, stand by. We're going to take a quick one, folks. It's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with our new friend, Leslie Kossoff. She's the author of Managing for Quality. 888-822-8255 if you'd like to join us. Thank you very much for joining us. I want to remind you that coming up in the shows ahead, we're going to be talking to Craig Smith. He is one of the folks involved with voter.com, and we're going to be talking to him about the post-Super Tuesday primaries. He's a Democrat. And so that's going to be very interesting. Going to get Craig on the show. Also, Adam Thier is going to be joining us to talk to us about Internet taxation. He's with the Heritage Foundation, and that's coming up in the shows ahead. A lot more the rest of the week. We're visiting with our new friend, Leslie Kossoff. She's the author of Managing for Quality, and also her other book is called Executive Thinking. Her last name is K-O-S-S-O-F-F. Spell that out when you type in her name into the search engines at the in the online bookstores and check out her books. Leslie, I want you to come back some more in the future and give us some more history of quality. But before we go any further, I'd like to stop the history lesson just for a minute, and let's get into what quality is a little bit.
My pleasure.
If we could do that. Tell us what quality is.
In its simplest forms, it is a proactive way of managing so that what you are constantly doing is reducing waste in time, materials, and ultimately money.
Okay.
It really, and that's it. It's a way of looking at your organization from every possible perspective, both the, you know, through the measurements that you use, the way that your people work together, the way that your organization is designed, how you work with your suppliers, how many suppliers you have, you know, and even how many customers you have, depending, especially, this is crucial for small businesses, how many customers you have, what kinds of customers they are, how they treat you, how much time you're having to spend in supporting them that goes far beyond what they're paying you for, all of those kinds of issues that give you the opportunity to constantly reduce any form of waste inside of your organization.
Well, that's well said, and I like the way you gave that definition without mentioning one thing about manufacturing.
Yes.
And see, that's a misnomer, I think, a misconception, I think, that people get about quality is when as you know, there are a lot of small businesses who are in manufacturing and assembly and that sort of thing. But most small businesses are not in manufacturing.
No.
Retail, service organizations, and are the majority probably. And those people hear about quality. They hear about it. They hear about ISO 9000, and they know that that's mostly in manufacturing, and although it's not just in manufacturing, but that's where they typically hear about it. And so they think, well, how? I own a pest control company. I own a florist shop. I own a an automobile dealership or whatever. How? Or I'm a doctor,
mm-hmm.
you know, small business, which is a small business owner, or I'm a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
How do we install quality processes in those kinds of organizations?
By looking at everything that you do from a process perspective. I actually don't make any differentiation whatsoever between manufacturing and service organizations, because what I came to realize, and I came out of a manufacturing background when I was first learning about this whole arena and how to implement it, but very quickly, in order to support the manufacturing side of the house, I was working with the service side of the house, finance, administration, all of the rest, and realize that for people in service, they're simply manufacturing their service.
Mm-hmm.
There are still a sequential set of steps that they need to go through to be able to perform their service in as effective and efficient a manner as possible. And that's the orientation. It's understanding that underlying everything, no matter whether it is manufacturing or service, in terms of what your ultimate product is, it's that you go through a set of steps, and it's looking at all of those steps to see if they're in alignment, to see if the sequence is correct, to see how much time is wasted inside of the various steps that don't add value, ultimately either to your business or even in many cases to your customers.
One of the things that in the last hour when we were visiting with Pierce Howard, we were talking about the importance of making sure that you train your people in such a way that their brain will accept that training and get the most production out of that training and retention out of that training. And I explained what my definition of the of a quality process is, and I used a manufacturing example. I said, okay, you're in an assembly line. And the old way of doing business on an assembly line is you no one inspects or creates or makes quality adjustments along the line in the old way. because they say, okay, the quality inspectors will get that at the end of the line. They'll kick out the bad ones. The correct way to do it with a quality process, everyone, every single person in that organization has the ability to say, stop, we need to fix this now, so that when it gets to the end, everything is perfect, so to speak, and nothing gets kicked out. Now, in a service organization, think about that. What happens if someone is delivering a service and they don't fix it? They're something that's intangible. If you've got something that's delivered incorrectly or improperly or it's not in a quality manner, then how do you go back and fix that intangible? You can't, can you?
No, you can't. And the problem, particularly with service organizations, is that people take the experience that they had someplace else and they apply it across the board to every other service experience that they're going to have.
Right. And it goes upstream and downstream. It goes to the customers and it goes to your vendors. You've got to bring in everybody that touches your organization. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about the difference between quality service and quality process. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Whatever you do, don't forget to go there and check out my site and sign up for my newsletter. I think you'll like it. It comes once a week by email. And if you don't like it, unsubscribing is even easier than subscribing. Leslie Kossoff is our friend and our guest this hour. She's the author of Managing for Quality, also Executive Thinking. Spell her name Kossoff, two S's and two F's when you type that in to the bookstores, the online bookstores, or when you're looking for it on the shelves. Leslie, by the way, give us your website one more time, please.
It's www.kossoff.com, same spelling that you just gave.
Okay, .com. Check that out, folks. And by the way, Leslie's going to be back with us again next week, folks. We're going to talk some more about quality. I want to squeeze as much quality information out of her brain as we can get so that you can have it. And Leslie, I want to talk about the difference between quality service and quality process as we wrap up the hour. Quality service is the old way of doing business, and that's where this is where I think most small businesses are. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Did we mess that up? I'll send somebody out right now. We'll fix that right away. And you hang up the phone, somebody goes right out there, and they fix it, and you're so proud of yourself because, by golly, we had a problem and we fixed it, and I don't know what else anybody could do. And the customer says, hey, so-and-so came out, and I had a problem, and they fixed it immediately. Boy, aren't they great. That's the old way. That's quality service. Quality process says it didn't get broken, it didn't get delivered improperly the first time.
Absolutely. And that's where the focus on quality needs to be, is on that whole quality process idea. Very frankly, you can be the most highly thought of, wonderful company, and this is particularly true of small businesses, by providing that quality service, and you can put yourself out of business because the costs of after-the-fact quality are far higher than taking a proactive approach.
Folks, there's a sleeper dividend out there waiting on you, and it's in the quality process. And by that, I mean the little story that I just told you, when you hang up the phone and you set in motion all this wonderful extra quality service, well, that's a person, that's a truck, that's gasoline, that's the loss in productivity. All of that comes right off your bottom line because there was no revenue associated with fixing that problem. So if you want to drive your bottom line and you think you've squeezed every other kind of efficiency out of your organization, look to the quality dividend.
Absolutely.
Any other thoughts on that, Leslie?
No, not really. That's what it comes down to, that ultimately you don't necessarily go into quality to save money, but the outcome is that you save a lot of money, and it has a direct effect on increasing profits.
Well, the reason that I wanted to focus on that is because that is what drives small business owners. I can tell you right now, I promise you, small business owners don't like the word process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't like statistical analysis. That's not something that most of us want to talk about.
No.
Because you know why? Because you're going to want us to analyze something and create a statistical analysis of something, and guess who you're talking to? Guess who's going to have to do that? The guy you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a lot of us small business owners, we're the ones that are going to have to do that. But what we're saying, folks, is it's worth the time and the effort.
And it doesn't have to be that much time or that much effort to start seeing some wonderful results very quickly.
And it's not Greek, is it? I mean, it's just math, basically.
It's basic math. It's very basic math. And sometimes you don't even need to do the math to be able to start getting an idea of where you can make your improvements, and then the math comes later.
It's all part of, a lot of it is part of MBWA, management by walking around.
Absolutely.
And paying attention. Leslie, that's got to be the last word. We've got to wrap it up for this hour. You were great today. Thank you for a great visit.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being here.
We'll see you next week.
I look forward to it.
Leslie Kossoff, ladies and gentlemen, the author of Managing for Quality and Executive Thinking. Check out both of those books. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.